situation has changed dramatically, and I really think a lot of that has gone back onto the under-sixes and different other things that have been brought in. I agreed with the under-sixes, but unfortunately they have brought in a huge amount of extra work onto the GP, and as a consequence of that, it's impossible to actually see people on a daily basis or come as you go, come and go.
And how, pardon my ignorance, is that because maybe people, you know, a child might be running a slight fever and because it's easier to access a GP, they will go rather than maybe usual home remedies? Or why would...
Well, I would think that. I mean, I'm not just actually saying this about the under sixes. I just took one example.
Yeah, but I'm trying to understand how that impacts. It's because it's too easy to go to the GP.
Yeah, well, basically, in my experience, both in politics and in medicine, in general, anything that's brought in, anything that is actually free, for want of a better word, okay, tends to be abused or tends to be actually accessed when sometimes the necessity is not actually there. And really, the figures in that particular area, as in some other areas as well, they have actually dramatically increased. And we were down to the situation where you try to see again a 10-minute appointment. A 10-minute appointment is very, very little. It is little value, in my opinion, a 10-minute appointment if you have to see somebody. And invariably, therefore, you are running behind time. And invariably, this has led to a waiting list. I can see the time coming shortly when you will actually wait for a week to see a GP. I have no doubt whatsoever that that's going to happen. And you have the nurses that are out on strike. They're only part of the problem. They're only part of the primary care problem that has evolved, because primary care was supposed to be the be-all and end-all of it, that everything would be seen, and we were the front line and so on and so forth. But unfortunately, that hasn't materialized because they have taken certain tests and certain investigations and different other things from the GP that we were availing of. In other words, if you were to have somebody come in with a chest pain, yes, there was a simple test called a troponin. It's a blood test. You could actually ask for a troponin and you could follow it up with another test in 3 or 4 hours. You could automatically say, no, this has nothing to do with your heart. But unfortunately, those tests have all been taken from us now. So if you were to come in here with a chest pain, I can't afford the luxury of saying, oh, I'll go home and take a Panadol. You know, you do have to have that person investigated because, the pressure is there. And therefore, as a consequence of that, we are part of the problem, and that we are referring more people to A&E simply because a lot of these investigations have been taken from the GP.
And also, too, you see now people are reporting, seeing that, you know, GPs are having to put signs up in some cases saying that, you know, one complaint or two, not complaint, but, you know, we can talk about one or two things maximum per appointment.
Yes. Oh, yeah, maximum per... Well, I mean, basically, again, it would be somebody comes in and they make an appointment. It's a 10-minute appointment. From next week, I'm going to be going to 15 minutes because it's impossible to see people in 10 minutes. But for a 10-minute appointment, and somebody comes in and maybe has a child and maybe there's an extra child there, it does add to the time. And sometimes the patient wants, the parent wants to be seen themselves. That all adds up. I'm not... being critical of it, but it does actually add up, and it knocks the time element back of the other people who are waiting there. So therefore, you know, yes, some people are saying that you've only got an appointment for one person. Difficult as it may be to say that to the patient, but if it's not too bad, could you make another appointment? Yes, it's there's friction. I can see friction developing as a consequence of the state of primary care. Yeah.
And where do we go from here then? Because, you know, we speak to GPs here, doctor, who would say that, you know, I'm retiring. Who's going to come in and replace me? I think there's been changes too drug prescription and stuff like that there. Yes. That's that we could be seeing a significant fall in GPs, yet we're seeing an increase in rise in GP visits. Where does this all end, in your opinion?
Well, we've got to get them, as I said, we've got to get the doctors back. I mean, there are quite a large number of doctors who are qualifying every year, but unfortunately those doctors are going abroad. The faraway hills are green, there are better facilities, but they're better literally everything there. But those people there will continue to be that way. It's like the church and the priests. There's a big problem there. Yes, there's no question about it that GPs are going to be that we're going to go that way. And I can see the day that where you have the likes of CareDoc who are now taking over the emergency services at night time. You are going to have those type of services that will be coming in, and that will be the norm. That's I'm talking about down the road. To me, the GP situation is going to deteriorate to an extent to where you will have Now Doc or Care Doc or whatever it may be actually becoming the norm, and you will have an excess of foreign doctors who are very, very good, but a lot of times, sometimes there are problems with language, and sometimes there are problems with delays and how long that they actually take to see patients and so on and so forth. And all of those things, I can see it ending up. I just can't see any light at the end of the tunnel here, because the way that it is progressing is, for want of a better word, is blind, kind of leading the blind, because what I am actually after describing, I can see that also is going to cause huge, huge problems. And I'd say anybody waiting in Now Doc, anybody waiting in A&E, well, you can be prepared for more and more and more of that in the future.
Which is even more worrying in a rural area where time is of the essence, and eventually if you do get seen and are referred to hospital, it all adds up. I was speaking to someone relatively recently who's due to retire, a senior person sort of in medicine, and he said, she said, speaking to their colleagues, they wonder as they age, as they go into their 70s and 80s, God willing, he actually says, well, who's going to look after us? You know, that's a genuine concern. That's where they see from within the health system going. So what do we need to do to change it?
Well, we need to keep the people who are qualifying in this country or in Northern Ireland. We need to keep those people here, and we need to make it better. We need to make the system better. Yes, a lot of doctors are entering into those age groups, myself included, and as I say, there are nobody looking, to take it up. We are currently looking, we could do with another doctor. We are currently looking for another doctor. Mm. We're out hunting, but there's nobody biting. We can't find anybody. We're looking, and I think my colleagues the last time they were looking for somebody in Monaghan, we were going to talk to somebody. We can't get those people there now. And we have a good built up practice here, but we just don't seem to be able to get a new doctor to come in, because there are three of us here. We really need four because of the numbers of patients that we have. And I just described the waiting list is going to get longer for the GP, perhaps up to a week within a year or two. We need you need a fourth doctor here, and it's just impossible. It's impossible to do that.
And I know single practice, GP.
I couldn't imagine how anybody could contemplate single practice.
I know one person in that situation, or one who might have someone that helps them, who could retire but is actually doesn't see anyone coming behind him to replace him, and if he retires he feels he's letting down an entire reasonably sized community. That is not really a way to be doing business, that we have to rely almost on people's goodwill.
Exactly, I could really say you're talking to one of those people, yourself. I mean, I'm at the stage where I should be getting out, but I just love the work, all right. And basically, to tell you the truth, and from my own personal point of view, I just don't know what I would do with my day without actually coming into practice. But
a part of your life is that. Yeah. When your decision can't be truly clear and focused, possibly because of the sense of commitment to the people of your area. In other words, it might be an easier decision to make if you knew you had a very good GP coming in straight behind you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would be a very easy decision, as I said, and everything. You know, you could make agreements and stuff there. But as I'm saying to you, right, we're in the hunt for looking for somebody to take over. I'm not saying I'm retiring yet, but what I'm actually saying is that yes, that is a major problem because you're letting down not alone your colleagues here. Because okay, you could do some part time whatever you wanted to do it, but the main thing is that you're communities, you know, they do get used to the doctor, rough and all as you may be, they get used to you as a doctor, and as I say, that is part of it there. They know you.
There's a two-way connection there too as well. There's a two-way connection there too, I'm sure. You've cared through people through years and have that intimate knowledge of them that's keeping them well. I mean, then, just finally, James, then are we relying or either intentionally or accidentally on too much goodwill, be it with nurses? I don't know if some people would agree or disagree with that, on GPs, even carers. You know, the lack of respite for carers, the lack of reward for carers that in many cases are doing the state's job, but we perhaps arguably, again, are intentionally or unintentionally relying on goodwill, or in inverted commas, a vocation.
Yes, yeah, you're right in the words goodwill and vocation. They both go well together because, as I said, I'd be fully behind the nurses. I mean, I've been in politics and I know what it means with regards to budget and all the rest of it, and maybe breaking different agreements that have been there in the past. But at the moment, it's a nightmare. I mean, anybody who's actually been through A&E will tell you, right, that it obviously is a vocation when you see with the type of work that the nurses are doing. And then, of course, you hear it when you're having your capsule, my God, you know, What type of a day is it, are we going through here today? You know, there is no question about it that the number of people that are visiting doctors and the number of people that are visiting, particularly A&E, and as I say, I would think that GPs, you know, we are responsible for an awful lot of those going there. But at the end of the day, there doesn't seem to be any solution. And when they're taking facilities and tests and investigations away from us, there isn't very much that we can do. I can't tell somebody as he has a chest pain unless I'm absolutely sure. I go home and take a Panadol, and you understand. And
you can't risk that. And I think most people understand that indeed. And the same with a fracture or other stuff as well. I'm sure it's a scale.
I need an X-ray,
I mean, finally, and I don't want to worry people or concern people because, you know, this is a fluid situation, but, you know, Doctor, we are looking at an ageing population, a population that's getting older, and you tie all in what we've been discussing, perhaps a lack of beds in the community, lack of home care packages, and that's now in Alzheimer's. What are we doing to prepare for an increase in Alzheimer's, dementia, etc.? I mean, there is something coming down the tracks, and we are actually almost dispreparing for it, or whatever the opposite of preparing is.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this area, primary care was supposed to be the first line that the patient would come, and that we were supposed to be the guardians of the gates of the A&E departments. In other words, you know, you had to get past us in order to get to the A&E. But as I pointed out to you, when they remove certain facilities and add extra work on to you, which is of a very, you know, a problematic nature, and that you've got to care for the patient, or you've got to make sure that you know that you're not sending the patient home, and that there's something that you have missed when all of those facilities have been taken away from you. And then I'm afraid, you know, the situation is going to continue. There are less GPs going to be on the list, and at the same time, the overload is going to go on to the A&E departments, and the A&E departments are overloaded, and that's going to go back on to the nurses and the doctors that are up there. So there is a big, huge, unfortunate mass of trouble that's sort of building up in the specific area, and doesn't seem to be any solution to it, nor does it seem to be any solution coming. And I've not been
in my last question, I want to tap in that you're a GP, you're a medical professional, but you've also been a politician, and you know how things work, and you can look from looking at what's there at the moment, do you see anything or any collection or group or party or whatever that could actually get this by, you know, not get reports done on all this? I'm on about not look at this in election cycles, but look at this in 10, 20, 30 years and actually put a plan in place. I don't see a will there. Do you, from your knowledge?
No, we're just plodding along, and you might have been doing 40 miles per hour, you're now down to 20, 25 miles per hour. It's getting more sluggish and more sluggish all the time. And we are heavily reliant now on actually sending patients that we might have made a diagnosis previously, and we're heavily reliant on sending them up to the A&E. And there's one thing about what they're saying to me now. I mean, I have a patient going in there today, which I've waited on for 2 or 3 days, trying to do as many of the tests as I possibly could with them, simply because I know that when I send that particular patient up today, he is going to wait for at least 10 hours before he actually gets seen. And, you know, he will require to be admitted. But I would hope that I've done most of the tests with him, right? But at the same time, he's going to have to wait for 10 hours, so patients are saying to the now gone likes of the years to go, oh God, I need an X-ray, I must go to the A&E. Patients say, oh God, don't send me up there,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, that is
where we are, and that is where I'm saying, oh my God, I'm, you know, what's it going to be like in 5 to 10 years' time?